Okay.
And the key is you have to speak into it because it's like a digital, you'll break
up. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to this meeting of the ICANN's Geographic Region Working Group. The format for this morning is that we're going to have a discussion about various aspects of where the working group is at and are going to raise a number of questions that we are looking for input on. So it's going to be a pretty informal discussion. And I think we can start off by going over to Rob, who's going to pose some of the questions that I'm going to attempt to answer.
Thank you, Dave. I'm Rob Hogarth, Senior Policy Director for ICANN. And as Dave and I discussed, I'll ask a couple of provocative or interesting questions to begin to spur the dialogue that will also feed into the PowerPoint presentation that we've got up on the screen here physically in the room and that is also displayed in the Adobe Connect room. So for folks listening to this for posterity or who are checking this out through the various archives and transcripts, listening to the audio cast along with the Adobe Connect may be a good way of handling it. Dave, to start out, can you update us on where the working group is and what progress it's achieved to date?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Rob. Well, you may recall that in our first report, which was published last year, we tried to identify every purpose for which ICANN geographic regions are used. We also documented a number of matters which we believed we needed to take into consideration during the remainder of our work. These matters fell under three main headings: those that concern matters of principle, those that dealt with the way countries are allocated to regions, and those that concern the actual number of regions themselves. In our second draft report, we've progressed from the how regions are used to the why regions are used. In other words, we're trying to look behind the rote application of the rules and regulations that are in the bylaws to identify why we are applying them and what we're trying to achieve. And then in each case, we want to assess whether or not these goals are in fact being achieved. And I've got to say that, in my view, a number of them are not. Then in our final phase, we examine all the instances where the goals aren't being achieved or are only being partly achieved, and we're trying to decide whether or not the original goals are then still valid. And of course, if they're not valid, perhaps we should change them or drop them completely. Or if they are valid and we're not achieving them, then we've got to see how we can improve things. So that's where we're at the moment. And obviously, feedback from the community is vital at this stage, particularly whether, in their view, within their own community, the use that regions are put to are valid or not. That's going to be key.
Thanks. To spark some further conversations or thoughts from others, you just said that in your view, some of the original expectations of the framework were not being met. Can you give some examples of that?
Yeah, sure. There are quite a lot, but I'll take one main example because I think it highlights different aspects of the issue. So if I can sort of direct you to the slides now. The initial purpose of ICANN regions, you know, the basic key reason for developing them, was defined in 1998 as an aid to ensuring the broad international representation on the ICANN board, and that was all. And the words that were used back then was that the makeup of the ICANN board should reflect the geographical and functional diversity of the internet. Now that's pretty high-level words, but also there was a big issue about that the procedures for appointing board members should be sufficiently flexible to permit evolution to reflect changes in the constituency of internet stakeholders. And I say there was a big issue about that because those words didn't appear in the very first draft of the bylaws that were put to the U.S. Department of Commerce. And this requirement to, if you like, match the development of the internet was something that they came back on and insisted that these words went into the bylaws. So let's look at what that means. If we go on, translating these into goals, if you like, it was the first one was geographic diversity, and then there was the idea of which reflects the geographical diversity of the internet, and which is flexible enough to continue to reflect the constituency of internet stakeholders as it changes over time. So we've got three things: diversity, reflecting the makeup of the internet, both now and in the future. And that's the sort of the three concepts I'm trying to get over. So we could then look at how this was actually implemented. Well, to start with, the five regions, which everybody knows and are up on that slide, were originally named in the first draft of the bylaws. And we've no record, there's nothing on the public record that we can find that says how those five regions came into being. Why those five? But our best guess is that they were based on the existing and planned RIRs that were there, so Arran and Ripe and so on. And that was probably quite a good idea. That was a reflection, if you like, of the practical internet. And then there was the question of allocating countries to those regions. And the board and staff came up with the idea that it would be better to go to an independent, internationally recognised list to allocate those countries, rather than do it themselves. Now, one can understand the reasoning behind that. They didn't think they were the experts for doing it. But on the other hand, look at the fundamental principles here. It was, you were supposed to be mapping the makeup of the internet. And what they did was they chose the UN statistics tables, which has got absolutely nothing to do with the makeup of the internet. So, you know, there's a bit of a disconnect at that point. And then not only that, although they said they were adopting the UN statistics table of allocations of countries to regions, as we'll see in a moment, it was only, well, sort of, because they made an awful lot of changes. So let's have a look at this, and many of you may have seen this before. It's my sort of explanation of the two regional structures. There's the world according to ICANN up at the top, showing all the present ICANN regions. And then down at the bottom is the world according to the UN statistics, and this is their breakdown. And you will see there are significant differences between the two. The numbers in brackets underneath each of the names are the number of countries. So, just starting at the left-hand side, ICANN reckons that Africa has 54 countries, and UN statistics thinks it's got 57. That's just a small example, but you can see them all the way across the top. To at the right-hand side, ICANN thinks North America has got 8, and the closest we've got on the UN statistics side is the Americas with 51. So they're not an exact match. So how did we go from one to the other? Let's start with the UN statistics table, which is just a repeat across the top there. And then you will see that underneath the Americas, there's a division. They go down and take a further cut at it and say that the Americas are made up of Latin America and the Caribbean plus Northern America. There's also a footnote in that table that splits it a different way and says, well, Americas can be split into South America and North America. Well, the first thing we've got to do is get rid of Oceania, because ICANN doesn't recognise Oceania. And it takes everything that's in Oceania and dumps it over in Asia to become Asia Pacific. And the number of countries leap up to 75. Then, of course, they delete the Americas. And what they do is move up some of these subdivisions. So North America gets moved up onto the top level, and then does Latin America and Caribbean. And then we've got to add a number of countries that are not in the UN statistics list at all. And then there was a decision made, really by staff rather than by board, that all territories should be allocated to the region of their mother country. Now, there is no real explanation for that, and that causes quite a lot of problems. So here we go. Doing that changes LAC from 46 to 33, Africa to 54, Asia Pacific goes to 73, Europe goes up by a whopping 75 because Europe has the mother country of lots of territories, and then North America does go up to 8 because of places like American Samoa. And now we've got the world according to ICANN. And just out of interest, if the uplifting, as I call it, of Latin America and Caribbean and North America are included, 40% of countries are in a different region in ICANN than they are from the one allocated by UN statistics. And if you don't include that uplifting, you say, well, that's gilding the lily a bit. Well, still 17% of countries are in a different region in ICANN from what they are in UN statistics. So the point I'm making here really is not that it's wrong, but that you can't say that they're using an independent authoritative list with all those changes in it. We could look at it another way, or another aspect of the same issue. I put up on the slides here statistics for the number of internet users in each of the regions. Now, this is only one metric. You could look at number of servers, number of IP addresses, a whole range of things. But it's easy to get the stats for these. So I'm looking at the number of users in each region in, because they happen to be available, December 2000, and then the current figures, which are, in fact, for 2009. Now, it's not easy to perhaps see the results of those figures, so I put in a couple of pie charts which make it a bit clearer. Here we have the pie chart for the makeup of the internet in 2000, and you will see that Asia, Europe and North America are in roughly balance there, and then there's a little bit for Latin America and Caribbean, and an even littler bit for Africa. So, if the original board reflected the makeup of the internet, this is the sort of breakdown you would expect in 2000. But if we now leap ahead to 2009, it's pretty obvious that there have been some mammoth changes. So, particularly, you can see Asia, Australia, Pacific now making up 46, and I would imagine by now closer to 50. percent of the number of internet users, and North America particularly has gone down in proportion to only 14%. There have been increases in Latin America up to 10% and in Africa up to about 5%. And if we look further ahead in the future and look at possibilities, this bar chart compares the number of current users with the actual available population. So if you like, it is a thing of penetration in 2009. And if you accept that the very, very young and the very, very old probably are never going to get on the internet, North America is just about at saturation point compared to Africa and Asia Pacific, where there is huge potential growth still. Now, this is nothing new, but just bear it in mind, if we think of that pie chart, that's where it is today and where that pie chart is likely to go over the next few years. So having had a look at some of those, let's go back to the original goals. And we've got geographic diversity. Well, yeah, it's regions are giving quite a lot of geographic diversity. I'll give you that. Which reflects the geographical diversity of the internet? Well, I don't think so. At least not then. And is it flexible enough to continue to reflect in the future as times progress? I'd give it a zero on that. And in fact, there have been absolutely no changes to the makeup of the regions over the past 10 years. And then on top of that, the structure is ICANN specific. It's not an independent authoritative list. It may be based on it, but there have been a whole lot of changes to it. And it doesn't comply with international norms, and I'll go into that. That's another point we can touch on later. And it was probably not properly authorised by the board, in fact. Again, a minor point, but it's something to be borne in mind. The board approved, this is on the, I think it was 2003 board meeting, it was approved to use the UN statistics list. Nothing else. The modifications were never contained in the board resolution. So my conclusion on this one, Rob, to go back to your original question, taking this primary function of geographic regions, I don't think the scorecard is all that good.
Thank you, Dave. That's very compelling. You had mentioned international norms. Can you expand on that just a little bit?
Yeah. This goes back to the advice originally given by the GAC to the board at the time they were preparing to allocate countries to specific regions. And the advice from the GAC, and I don't have the exact words here, but it was something that, you know, the board should try seek to comply with the international norms when doing so. And that international norms has never been actually very clearly defined. Perhaps it was a good GAC statement. But I've certainly tried to look at what you might consider international norms. And I went to, for example, the UN and looked at their various organisations. And the UNDP does have regions, but it breaks it up, as you see on the board there. So it's Africa, the Arab states, Asia and the Pacific, Europe and the Commonwealth of Independent States, that's Russia, and Latin America and the Caribbean. You notice that America actually isn't even mentioned, because this is the development side, and I think they think America's already developed. But that's UNDP's definition, nothing like the statistics one and nothing like ICANN's one. And then there's the UN Economic and Social Council, which in fact is quite an important council. It oversees about 17 of UN's functions. And they split it up into Africa, Europe, Latin America and the Caribbean, Asia and the Pacific, and Western Asia. Different again. Another model that I looked at, I mean, we're sort of a bit like the ITU, heaven forbid, so I looked at some of the ITU functions, and the ITU Council uses America, Western Europe, Eastern Europe and Northern Asia, Africa, Asia and Australia. But one of their own subdivisions uses Africa, Asia and the Pacific, Arab states, Europe, the Americas, and the Commonwealth of Independent States. And the Telecommunications Bureau uses yet another one, Africa, Americas, Asia, Europe, and others. And of course, the Radio Communications Bureau divides the world up into three zones for spectrum purposes, which again are quite different. So having looked around, trying to establish what is an international norm, I have totally failed to do. And the other issue that is worth looking at, and this actually came from members of the GAC, that it is very common within international communities for ad hoc groups to be made up to deal with particular areas of interest. And depending upon the subject, that may go on for years, that grouping may go on for years, like small island states, for example, whereas others will rise and fall as the topic of shared interest goes away. So you have a whole lot of dynamic groups. And I think that's an interesting observation, and perhaps that is more of an international norm than that trying to find this independent list. So does that sort of answer your question about international norms?
Yes, thank you. Your presentation touches on a number of questions, but it also suggests that there are some other unanswered ones. Are there any others that you'd like to raise or pose in this forum?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm very happy to the members here to give some feedback to these specific ones. I mean, perhaps we should pause for a moment and say, are there any questions about what I've said so far?
And please use the microphone and talk directly in so we can capture your comments.
Good morning. My name is Roland Perry. I'm from the RIPE NCC. And I spend most of my time travelling around the world going to international conferences and things, so this is all very interesting to me. In fact, I got the first email I opened this morning was from one of my colleagues who's currently in a meeting in Cairns in Australia, where one of the leading protagonists, if that's the right word, in a particular debate, was Iran. I'm sitting there going, why is Iran in a meeting in Cairns? And the reason is because they're a member of APECTEL, which is Asia Pacific Telecommunications Subcommittee. And it seems to me that in the work that I do, it's kind of these ad hoc groups in a way. Is APECTEL, is CTEL, is the OECD, are these the kind of ad hoc groups we're talking about? I mean, the most powerful group within the ITU, to me, seems to be, or the most coherent group, seems to be the Arab states. And the Arab states fall absolutely half and half in between RIPE region, which has the Middle East, what we call the Middle East, and North Africa, which we put in under AFRINIC. Okay, so what interests me is my ability to, if you like, myself and my colleagues from the other RIR regions to mingle in the right kind of groups. In other words, if I want to go to a meeting in, we talked about a meeting in Damascus that we're going to go to in January, which ICANN colleague would be covering Damascus and why? Okay. And I think each of us will end up with a kind of a speciality. Despite the fact I'm from European region, I tend to go probably more around the world than some of my other colleagues. I don't know why, just historical reasons, I suppose. Maybe because I actually cover, because OECD and United Nations that deals with IGF are both in Europe, and I can fly to both of those venues in about an hour, then I kind of get to deal with those. All right. And of course, I mean, here we are in Brussels. Another ad hoc, maybe, grouping is the European Community, which I increasingly look upon, from my point of view, it helps my thinking to look upon the EU as the United States of Europe. In fact, it's much more like the United States of Europe as a power block, say, mirroring what's going on in Washington. So Brussels is our Washington, and UK is ICANN's California, and Germany is ICANN's Texas, and so on. That's actually much more how it works at the sort of regional level that I see. And so I was very interested in that slide at the beginning. I don't know if that was just an indicative picture or whether that was an accurate picture, but it seemed to me that, particularly around the Middle East, a lot of these regions were simply not overlapping. And if you had a meeting in, say, somewhere like Damascus or Iran or something like that, the chances are that's going to be in about four different regions, depending on whose region you're talking about, because the Middle East seems to be this pivot around which people have difficulty mapping their own maps of the world. Anyway, I shall stop talking now and be here all morning.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think you raised some interesting points, and a question that isn't on these slides here, but one that we have looked at in our discussions, and I think we maybe even mentioned in our draft report, is this question about, is there any need for ICANN's regions to map directly onto other regions or not? And I think that's an open question. I mean, should we actually take the existing RIR regions at the moment and say, hey, let's adopt that across the board. But certainly in our first report, one of our conclusions was that there are certain operational reasons for having a different organisational structure, like is used by the ICANN regional liaisons, because there are, you mentioned the Arab states, for example. So if one of the regional liaisons is an Arab speaker, it makes much more sense to utilise his skills with the Arab world. But that is not to say that we should suddenly change the whole ICANN structure so that there is an Arab region. Though, I mean, I must admit that there is, from some people, there's quite a pull to set up an Arab region, but equally there's a very strong feeling from within Africa that Africa should not be split. So, you know, there are views on both sides of that. Any other comments on sort of what's gone already, or are you happy for me to move on to some other questions?
This is Carlton, a member of the group. I think it's good, the information so far is quite compelling. I would say that the work really is, the question that we now need to ask is whether or not we need to seek to justify, as it were, the present situation beyond what is just said, or whether or not we leave open the question of change and to what. I think it's important for us to kind of indicate what it's looking like. We the last slide showed just one reason, and then there were three others that we cannot justify.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably best to just explore that a little bit.
Well, yeah. I think that's true. I think we've got to look at these in each case and say, okay, it hasn't met those. However, as I sort of said at the start of the presentation, it hasn't met some aims. But we've also got to look at, where are those aims still valid? I mean, it's what we have deduced was the original aim.
Right.
It may not be valid today, so we can forget about it. Yeah.
I mean, it does depend what your aim in having regions is. I say my aim would be to best promote liaison between ICANN and other international organisations, and therefore it helps if the, for example, if I can, you know, Europe's an easy region really, but if I know who the ICANN rep for Europe is, then that's obviously somebody I'm going to make a beeline for whenever I'm at some sort of conference somewhere. But on the other hand, are you talking about it with quotas? All right. So, for example, is somebody at some point going to say, well, actually, on the board, we need at least one person from each region, or maybe down this end of the board table, we want exactly one person from each region? And that's the way the ITU do it, and the ITU had a extremely interesting session right at the end of the WTDC a couple of weeks ago, where they were nominating, and I'm struggling to remember what office this was, but it was some kind of committee that they have, where they wanted one person from Europe, one person from the Russian region, and they had a big argument because they used to have two people from Africa. And someone had changed their mind and decided, well, this time we're only going to have one person from Africa. Okay. But that was because they were running a quota system. And they're saying, well, we're going to have quotas for the regions so that it's fairer, presumably. So it depends why you're wanting regions. Or are you just doing it so, for example, travel. One of the things that occurs to us as RIRs is, are we based in places where it's easy for us to travel, either within our region or outside our region? And some parts of the world, particularly Southern Hemisphere, it's notoriously difficult to travel across. You always have to travel north and then south again. So, for example, my colleagues in Mauritius from AfriNIC pretty much have to travel to Dubai or somewhere that's actually in the Northern Hemisphere to then fly back down somewhere else.
Yep.
And so one of the kind of operational convenience might be if you're going to have a region with somebody covering that region, for whatever covering the region means, that it's good if they've got a geographical region that it's reasonably easy for them to travel around and hasn't got any exceptional places. My final point here, actually, is to do with visas and things like that. Okay, it's very convenient for me, being a European, that I can travel all over Europe. And I don't even have to worry about visas. I almost don't have to worry about passports, but I do actually. Mm-hmm. But it's a convenience. For example, in the Arab states, again, it's much easier to travel around the Arab states if you're a resident of one of the Arab states, just for visa purposes. So that's just another thing to think about when you're trying to select a group of like-minded countries.
Yeah, the reasons, I think we're reasonably clear on the primary reasons are to maximise the representation and participation of the ICANN community, or the internet community, rather, and as much as possible to bring people that are in the internet community but not the ICANN community into the ICANN community. So I think we're pretty clear on the primary objective, and the things that you mentioned are all very valid, but they are really secondary considerations underneath that.
Sorry, could I just ask there, do you have any ambition or plans to have regional meetings?
We do already have. There are regional meetings and there are regional organisations, but that's a separate issue. Let me go back, because I know we've got to watch time a little bit. Let me go back to some of these additional questions. The first one we've sort of touched on already, and that's, are ICANN's geographical regions consistent with international norms? And are there other structures equally or more consistent with international norms? And what do you feel about dynamic ad hoc groupings? Now, these are all questions. I'm not suggesting that we necessarily get answers now, but they are certainly questions that I don't think it is just the working group itself that's got to answer them. I think we've got to try and get some feedback from the community. Another set of questions. Do the present ICANN geographic regions and their use enhance or detract from ICANN's goal of reflecting the functional, geographic and cultural diversity of the internet at all levels? Now, I'm emphasising cultural there, because when regions were set up and the whole procedure for selecting board members, etc., was done, culture didn't come into it. Cultural diversity was not introduced into the bylaws until, I believe, it was the review in 2003-2004, and that was very much added into the geographical, and cultural. But if you look at the procedures, they didn't change at all. So there was nothing that was introduced to actually implement this goal of cultural diversity. So, question, was it the assumption that the regions and geographic diversity was identical to cultural diversity? I don't know. But again, it would be nice to get some feedback, particularly from ICANN itself. I would say it's not working. It's certainly in some areas. We've mentioned already the Arab world, which feels it's got its own culture, which is quite different from the geographic diversity. There are, I think you've mentioned, Carlton, another aspect of this, and that is the way that some of the territories have been put with their parent countries, like the Cayman Islands, put in the European region. This can actually reduce cultural diversity, because we could have Jamaica on the board, say, representing Latin America and the Caribbean, and we could have Cayman on the board representing Europe, which is farcical when we're next door neighbours. You know, some of the things that have been done just don't seem logical. Some more questions. Do the present ICANN regions take into consideration the varying needs and concerns of different regions? And do ICANN regions and the selections based upon them provide the opportunity for those needs and concerns to be represented? Now, that came from the GNSO. In some of the comments that they gave to us, you know, this is what you should be taking into consideration. Very valid questions. Do the present ICANN regions balance the three goals that GNSO believe there should be: diversity of representation, ease of participation, and simplicity? Do the present ICANN regions enfranchise both existing and future users? Now, that's a good question. Particularly when we look at the likely size of some of the regions. Does the present allocation of countries to regions recognise the sovereignty and right of self-determination of states? That came from the CCNSO, and here we're very much into this question about dependent territories or overseas territories and how they are handled, which is something I don't want to get into this morning, but it's a problem area. Excuse me. The present single set of designated regions for ICANN adds to simplicity, but is this balanced with the evolving needs of ICANN supporting organisations and other bodies? Again, a GNSO question. Does the sheer size and diversity of some of the present regions create difficulties for meaningful participation in regional dialogues for smaller and less developed countries and resource-poor CCTLD managers? Now, that question actually came from somebody within the Asia-Australia-Pacific group, which is clearly by far the most geographically wide group, with the largest number of people and with the greatest growth area. And if ever there was a case, I think, for splitting up a region, perhaps that is one. So that's all the slides and the questions that I've got there, but I'd be very happy to hear any feedback from those present on any of those questions or indeed any other questions.
From the perspective, this is Rob Hogarth again. From the perspective of these questions and the goals and expectations that the working group has for the interim report, would you anticipate that a number of these questions will be set out in that report, sort of as a spark for community feedback to help the working group with its final report recommendations?
My present view, and I haven't actually discussed it with everybody in the group yet, so I'd be interested in the feedback from those here, is that we should highlight the questions, we should take a view, and if you like, put it out to the community with here's what we think the answers are, and I think that's more likely then to spark response if people disagree. You know, that's just from my experience of doing similar public consultations in the past. If you just ask the questions, you probably won't get any answers. But if you take a view and that really annoys somebody, then they're going to answer you.
It's Roland Perry here again. I'm just sort of brainstorming this a bit. I mean, one categorization that we haven't talked about in detail, it was kind of mentioned in passing, is an ITU concept of developed and developing countries. And I think we talked about island states and things as being one of their categories. And therefore, quite likely, North America and Europe don't have very many developing countries in them, whereas, for example, Africa region does. And we drew up some, within the RIR community, we drew up some tables recently to demonstrate the allocation of IP addresses to developing and non-developing countries. And I think I only had, in the whole RIPE region, which has got one of the largest numbers of different countries, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's probably 50 or 60, we've only got one developing country, which is Yemen. So, whereas other regions have got numerous developing countries. And again, it depends why you're creating these categories, what input are you expecting, what skills are you expecting to corral together, what needs and aspirations does that reflect, and what can you then deliver? You know, are you trying to focus your delivery to a particular culture, region, developed, non-developed, and so on and so forth? And I think for efficiency, I would tend to look at it in those ways.
I think that's a point that certainly the GNSO has raised, and indeed that has resulted in some modifications to the bylaws applying to the GNSO and its the constituencies within the GNSO. Well, of course, what we've talked about primarily this morning, because it perhaps the easiest, has been looking at regions and their use at the board level. What then happened, as I think everybody knows, is the regions were then adopted within many of the supporting organisations. They're the basis of AILAC. They are used extensively within the CCNSO. They are used to ensure diversity within the GNSO. But the most recent amendments to the GNSO bylaws changed the wording such that it allowed a degree of flexibility in the application of the regional requirements, and used words like "to the maximum extent possible." Communities are to arrange their committees in such and such a way. And I know they have expressed problems in the past where a more rigid format was taken, sort of along the lines you were talking about earlier with the ITU. If it is a pure quota system and there are not volunteers or people with the skills from the countries or areas that are being looked at, it does cause problems. I mean, you've got to balance the need for diversity with availability of nominees, for example. And that degree of flexibility is something that has been mentioned by many of the communities in the discussions that we've had with them. So thank you for that point. I it's a good one, I think. Does anybody wish to raise anything else? Because if not, we can close the session. What think you, Rob?
I guess the logical question I have is next steps and where members of the working group sort of perceive the next steps with respect and timing with respect to the interim report, and sort of, you know, where we go from here.
This is Carlton. I think some interesting questions were asked. As Dave rightly said, this is not just for the working group, but certainly we would expect to have some kind of input, at least some time, to see if there's any response from the community. And then we might, after a decent interval, make some attempt to answer them ourselves, and then probably make some recommendations on the answers that we give collectively.
As you know, Rob, we've reopened the questionnaire, and I'm sure you've got the address. You could, if you want to, include that.
I'm going to be putting that in the chat room here momentarily for the log.
Yeah, thanks. So the questionnaire is reopened in case our efforts during this week at Brussels it prompts some more people to fill that in. I think from here we've got to continue with this question approach, if you like. We've got a draft of that, of the report. I think we've got to tweak that, as it were, but then address, as I suggested, I think we've got to, as a working group, form some at least initial conclusions, and then publish the report in final form, but saying, you know, these are the questions, these are our views, give us feedback, community, and then move very quickly into saying, okay, well, if those were our conclusions, here's our proposed solutions. And that, in other words, we move quite quickly into the final report. And I think that is going to probably prompt much more reaction from the general worldwide community once they start seeing what our recommendations might be. So that's the next steps as I would see them. So I would be looking for publication of the second report pretty soon, and then would be looking for the final report well in advance of the meeting in Colombia. Okay, well, thank you everybody here and anybody listening. Been an interesting session, and we now call it closed and get on with the rest of our day here at ICANN.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.